Welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano. In for our fearless leader, Rachel Nichols. Today, I'm joined by our resident coach, David Fizdale, and our front office insider, Amin Alhassan. Coming up later in the show, of course, we'll have a season preview today. Today will be the 76ers. And are we to believe the Simmons-Embiid duo will be successful? What changes for them under Doc Rivers? All that stuff is coming up. But first, the NBA announced today that the Milwaukee Bucks violated league rules concerning the timing of this season's free agency discussions. And the league has rescinded the Bucks' 2022 second round pick as a result. Here's part of the league's statement on the penalty in regards to the Bogdan Bogdanovic situation. The league conducted an investigation into whether the Bucks had discussions with Bogdan Bogdanovic and or his agent regarding a free agent contract prior to the date when such discussions were permitted. The investigation concluded that early discussions did in fact occur, constituting conduct detrimental to the NBA. The penalty took into account the Bucks' cooperation with the investigation, the absence of evidence of any impermissible early agreement on terms of a contract between the Bucks and Bogdanovic, and the fact that the team ultimately did not sign Bogdanovic. So, Coach, is this a fair punishment from the league?
Yeah, I think it is. And, I wouldn't discount a second-round pick. I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, that's not a big deal and it doesn't, you know, really affect them. But 4 years ago, they drafted Malcolm Brogdon in the second round. So, you know, these second-round picks can turn into something pretty big if you are very good at combing through college basketball. Overall, though, it shows that they were serious about keeping Giannis because they were willing to get a little bit ahead of themselves to go talk to him. And, you know, you can see the results now. Giannis is staying home, and, I'm happy for him. But you can see Milwaukee was serious about getting out ahead of this thing and trying to keep him there.
Yeah, Coach, they were serious. And so I got to quote my buddy Tim McMahon, Ban McMahon, who said on Twitter, if that's the penalty, they might as well cancel the whole second round because everybody's going to start doing this. If that's the downside. The reality is, they said it's because they cooperated. Okay, all right, that's nice. Because they didn't end up with the player. I don't know how that, you know, that's supposed to be better. I think, you know, the attempt was clearly there to tamper. And so the big thing here is that regardless of what kind of pick it was, and by the way, second round pick from Milwaukee, we're talking 56, 57, 58, 59, or 60th in the draft. So it may not really make a difference. But the idea is, what is the downside for me tampering, engaging in tampering? And remember, this didn't come out because of an investigation. This came out because the Bucks leaked to media sources who then reported the story. So if the story hadn't been reported, if they hadn't leaked voluntarily to the media, then they wouldn't even have gotten caught. So to me, I was a little surprised that the league let them off that easily for something that was almost a foolproof plan.
Fizz, to your point, though, those second-round picks are valuable. And, yeah, I mean, they could be 59 or 60, but Isaiah Thomas was once, I believe, the 60th pick in the draft.
Right.
You know, Talen Horton Tucker, who everyone's talking about right now with the Lakers, was the 46th pick in
Baller.
The draft. So, right, those second-round picks are valuable. We saw a kid in Miami, KZ Akpala, as a second-round pick. Like, these second-round picks, with the teams that know how to develop talent, can be really fruitful.
Absolutely. And so that's why I say I get where Amin's coming from the standpoint of there should maybe be more. But let's be honest, you know, a lot of this stuff is happening behind the scenes. They leaked it, and it was almost like they wanted people to know that, and wanted Giannis to know, man, look, this is how far we was going to get you. You know what I mean? Because why else would that information leak out of the building? So, you know, I understand where he's coming from with that, but I do know that there is great, great value in second-round picks if you really understand how to comb through it.
They did want to show Giannis all the love, and he got the love, certainly. He got that big deal. All right, we mentioned Talen Horton Tucker. Let's talk about the Lakers and one of their young players.
Yeah.
The Lakers and Kyle Kuzma agreed on a three-year, $40 million extension yesterday. The deal includes a player option before the 2023-24 season, and the deal allows Kuzma to become an unrestricted free agent in his prime at 28 years old. LeBron reacted to the news with this tweet: "Kuz, congrats, bro. Next dinner on you for sure." Vino Chronicles. Amin, was this extension a good move for the defending champs?
It's a great move, and it's a great move for Kyle Kuzma as well. From the Lakers' perspective, you've got a young player who's developing, who was a contributing factor last year but dealt with some injuries. You got him at a very cost-efficient contract, $40 million over 3 years, and obviously that last one is a player option. So for the next 2 years after this one, they've got Kuzma, who they expect to grow and continue to be a contributor. From Kuzma's standpoint, he gets some financial security right now. Remember, he was a low first-round pick, so it's not like his rookie scale deal was millions and millions and millions of dollars. So he's got some security, but here's the better part. Because of the NBA rules surrounding trades with a guy who's agreed to a rookie extension, the poison pill rule basically makes it so that the Lakers are almost impossible or highly improbable to trade him this year. So Kuzma gets to opt out after 2 years and say, hey, maybe I played for two NBA championships after this second year here. It gives him more value in the trade market. It gives him more value on the free agency market in a couple of years. So I think everybody won with this one.
Yeah, I think this is a win-win for everybody. You know, you get a guy with that many skills, that much talent in that package with that team. I think it's great to lock him up because you got a guy who's 6'8", can guard multiple people. He's got multiple skill sets on the offensive end. And I'm going to tell you what, the Lakers are going to see his value, and this is why. We already know LeBron and AD.
Right.
Marc Gasol is going to make Kuzma look awesome.
So good.
He's going to spread the floor. He's going to catch him on back cuts. He's going to get him open shots. And now all of a sudden, we're going to see a different kind of Kuzma because he's going to be receiving from different people, and he doesn't have to go hunting for a shot or trying to do stuff to show people how good he is because he's going to be getting such easy baskets.
Well, to your point, if you look at his shot chart, Kuzma, a lot of it is cuts to the basket, and a lot of it is threes. So when you have a guy like Marc Gasol working from the high post, those cuts to the basket will be fantastic. I remember talking to Nick Nurse about that and how he really unlocked their offense a couple of years ago.
Absolutely.
With the ability that he has at the high post. But with Kuzma, to your point, he's actually become a much better defender. That was a deficiency early in his career. That is not the case anymore. They look at him as a big wing at 6'9" that can guard multiple positions. And I had the Lakers game on Friday in Phoenix, and Frank Vogel told us that Kuz actually asks for the best assignment, like to guard the best offensive player on the other team. Like, he has really grown in that regard.
Well, that's the slice of pie that he can get into, because right now you're not going to be the leading scorer or the second leading scorer. So how do you help the Lakers win another championship? And if he continues to grow defensively, that's just going to make them stronger. And you got a coach like Frank Vogel who's going to continue to develop them in that area.
I mean, real quick, let me ask you, you mentioned the contract status and the poison pill and whatnot. Because it is a manageable contract. I mean, if they wanted to, not that I'm saying the Lakers will try to trade Kyle Kuzma, but in year two, they could potentially trade him, right? Or no?
Yeah, so after this year, once the contract actually kicks in, because this year he's still making his rookie scale.
Right.
The next season, that's when his contract kicks in. That's when they could trade him. But to be honest with you, again, that would be maximum value because we're assuming that he's going to be a big part of another championship run here. Mm-hmm. At that point, you're talking about Kyle Kuzma, maybe a two-time NBA champion, and has shown us some things as a healthy player that can get them a lot more value than were they to trade him right now. But even without that, it's so hard with that poison pill provision. I think Bobby Marks on Twitter, I saw him say, it's never been done. That's how hard it is. It makes it really hard to make those numbers work with that poison pill in effect.
All right, let's do Oprah here. You get a contract. You get a contract. Everybody get a contract. Let's talk about Rudy Gobert's contract here.
I love it.
Agreed to a 5-year, $205 million extension. Gobert was eligible for the full $228 million Supermax extension, but told ESPN's Bam McMahon that he did not request the full Supermax because he wanted the Jazz to have some flexibility to continue building around him and Donovan Mitchell. Gobert's deal is the largest in NBA history for a center. So, Amin, using your front office experience and expertise, what do you make of this contract?
Yeah, I saw a lot of people kind of questioning that Rudy Gobert would have such a big deal, and I don't understand it. I think this is a perfect deal for Utah for two reasons. One, everyone has talked about. It's Utah. Free agents don't come very easily. You got to give up stuff to trade. And to draft and find the diamond in the rough, that's kind of hard. That's what they did with Rudy Gobert, right? So that's one thing. But I don't think that's the biggest reason. The biggest reason is he is a perfect complement to Donovan Mitchell. Yeah. Donovan Mitchell, an explosive offensive talent who can create for himself and others, but defensively needs a little help. Rudy Gobert, an elite defensive anchor, but offensively needs someone to create some of those easy dunks and layups for him. So together, they make a great complement. And that's why I'm glad to see that Utah's got them both under contract for 5 years after this one, because here's the reality. If it wasn't Donovan Mitchell as the other player, if it were, let's say, the other player were Kawhi Leonard, I would value this deal a lot worse, because Kawhi doesn't really need a Rudy Gobert, while Rudy does need a Kawhi. But in this case, the offensive talent of Donovan, the defensive talent of Rudy, perfect fit, perfect match. I love this deal for them.
Yeah, this is great bookends. You got your guard position solidified. You got your center position solidified. And let's be real about it. This guy's a defensive player of the year candidate every single year. Rim roller, high lob catcher. He's a guy that puts pressure on you with the offensive glass. I continue to see him grow in bits and pieces offensively, adding little things to his game, little parts to his game. He's still a young man, and he's going to be able to grow some more. And Donovan Mitchell, we already know, he's a flat-out beast. So now it's just continuing to try to fill those pieces around him, get some hits in the draft, steal some guys in free agency, and you got a team that you can really continue to build on in Utah, which I think up to this point they've done a heck of a job with what they have.
Yeah, and don't forget, they get Bojan Bogdanovic back this season healthy, right? And that was supposed to be a key piece to what they were trying to do last year.
Right. 18 a game.
So, and he's a guy that's not afraid to take the big shot, much like Donovan Mitchell. So then they have two guys effectively in those situations.
And the more shooting you put on the floor with Gobert, the tougher it is to take away those lobs.
Right, no question about it. All right, coming up next, Kyrie Irving was burning sage prior to Friday's preseason game against the Celtics. A practice he said he plans to continue throughout the season if permitted. Key words there. We'll react to Kyrie Irving being Kyrie next. Let's get to Kyrie Irving, who had Twitter buzzing with his pregame sage burning in his return to Boston on Friday. After the game, both Kyrie and KD were asked about it, and here's what they said.
It just comes from, you know, a lot of native tribes being able to sage, just cleanse the energy, you know, make sure that we're all balanced. And when we come into this job and we come to this place, it's not anything that I don't do at home that I did today. You know, I saged last game, and I plan to sage, you know, almost every game if the opposing team would allow me to. But literally, it's just more or less for us to stay connected and for us to feel great about going to work and feeling safe and provided from our ancestors, part of my native culture.
That's his thing. I mean, Kyrie probably sages his room before he plays 2K when he gets home. So that's just what he does. And I think that gives us good energy. He does it in the locker room. He just, that's his thing. And we all respect him. And you know, we all, you know, we respect his methods. You know, he comes out here and plays extremely hard for us.
All right, that was Kyrie in the postgame and KD with Cassidy Hubbard in the postgame. So, Amin, you heard Kyrie and KD there. What's your reaction to the pregame sage burning?
George, I love it. Just like I love the sage that I got from Spillage Village of Dreamville. Thanks, guys. That's that box back there. They sent me some scents and some incense and everything. So, I love it, man. I think this is the thing. If it's sincere, then it's great, man. Whatever gets him in the mood. Remember, Phil Jackson used to do this back in the day in the Lakers locker rooms, and nobody called him crazy. We all said, oh, he's such a great motivator. And that wasn't even his culture. Kyrie is legitimately Native American, so he at least has a claim to this. Phil just lived in Montana for a little bit. What's the deal there? But the other thing is, if it's not sincere, if he's trolling, I love it even better.
Yeah.
Because all the people are going to get up in arms and upset about it. How dare he? This is just beautiful, beautiful. I love it. Shout out to you, Kyrie.
Hey, man, my wife sages every house that we've ever moved into. And thank God I'm still married to her, because if I got divorced, that means the sage would have ran me off, right? So thank goodness that's the deal. I just think of Pedro Serrano when I see him from Major League.
Yeah, for sure.
As long as he's not killing chickens in the locker room, I'm cool. right? But I love it. Kyrie is trying to set the energy for the group. Hey, look, and if you're giving me the numbers Kyrie gives, you could do whatever you want. Say it's the whole building if you want.
I would imagine no coach will have an issue with
none.
That. And look, I'm with it. Like, I hope he's allowed to do it and permitted to do it in every arena. Like you guys do. However, I do feel like there's probably going to be some potential hurdle with burning something
fire
inside a building. Yeah, like I feel like that may be an obstacle in his way. I could be wrong. I hope that's not the case. I hope they still find a way where he can do this ritual and he can feel good about it. And everybody can feel good about it, including the league. But I do think the fire hazard part of it could be a minor setback.
I love it.
All right. There's the opening bell. The NBA preseason wrapped up this weekend. Despite the very small sample size, we're going to dig into the numbers for a round of the stat market. First up, Zion Williamson led the preseason in scoring with 28.5 points per game. He only played in two games, but saw a big jump in his minutes compared to his rookie season. With no playing restrictions, of course, on Zion now, we're looking to see if you are buying or selling, Coach, him being among the league leaders in points.
Absolutely buying. I think this kid is a natural scorer. He's a matchup problem. If you go back to last year's preseason, he was averaging about 23 a game and like four games that preseason, and they were 4-0. And so to see him playing probably six more minutes a game this preseason in two games and his numbers making that kind of jump does not surprise me, and he's going to be sitting right there in that group all year long.
Sell. We're selling on this. We are selling on 28 points per game. That's way too high. Look, let me say this. Right? There's a couple of things that are in the way. One is conditioning. Can he do this every day, every game throughout the season? Two is it is the preseason. Coach is right. He did this in the preseason last year and shot like 79%. What happened when he played in NBA games? He was really good.
He wasn't that good, though. Look, I'm excited for him, and the Pelicans should be excited, but 28 points per game in the second year, when he's barely played 20 games in his NBA career, me and my broker are saying we're selling.
All right. I'm buying. I'm with Fizz because if there's one thing I know about Stan Van Gundy, he's going to give his best player the ball a lot, and he's going to be able to score, and his second jump is so good, okay? So even when he misses around the rim, he's up faster than anyone else trying to get that first jump. So I'm going to buy on this one. Let's move on to another hot start. The Nuggets have carried their bubble success into the preseason. They have the third best offense, fourth best defense, and lead the league in preseason net efficiency. For context, the Bucks have led this category the past two regular seasons. It was just three games, but Amin, are you buying or selling Denver's preseason numbers?
I'm not even consulting my broker on this one. I am selling. The fourth best defense in the Denver Nuggets when their four of their best defenders have all left in the last 12 months? No. I'm not here for that. The Nuggets offense is going to be amazing. I'm here for that. But defensively, this is a team that's going to struggle all year long. This is the problem when we play three preseason games against two different teams. You just don't get a clear picture of what you really are as a team.
You know what? I'm going to buy it. I think the experience that they've gotten and going through the wars and understanding what playoff stops mean. They came back from 3-1 twice, right? So to do that means you're getting stops. That means you're putting together a collection of defensive actions where you keep people from scoring against you, not just Jamal Murray going off and scoring. So I think this team is ready to make that jump. They added Jamichael Green to that mix, who's a tough sucker. I coached him in Memphis. And I just think Mike Malone, his first deal is defense. He is a defensive coach first. And the fact that they're so good offensively is just going to help that defense be better.
So, Coach, I'm going to sell like Amin, although I do agree with you. Michael Malone is a defensive-minded coach. And I think eventually the defense will round out. But I do think missing Grant and Plumlee and Torrey Craig and those type of guys, I think – could be an adjustment at least for them defensively early on. But their offense is going to be ridiculous. I don't think there's any question about that. All right, finally, the Celtics have looked completely lost on offense, actually, in their two preseason games. They shot a league-worst 23% from three and have the worst offensive rating in the NBA. Now, look, it's unlikely that they'll be this bad in the regular season considering their talent. And, of course, they're hoping to have Kemba Walker back. But Coach, are you buying or selling a sign of what's to come for the Celtics?
Oh, no, we're selling that. That is no way the Celtics are going to be that bad offensively. I'm sorry. They got too many weapons, too many guys that's done it with the popcorn popping. I just do not see them shooting the ball this badly and playing this poorly offensively. There's just no way.
I got confused. Are we buying or selling that Celtics being good or bad on offense? Either way, I think they're going to be good on offense.
Whether
I'm buying and selling, I'm here for the Celtics being good offensively for all the reasons that Coach said. You got a player like Jason Tatum. This is an elite offensive player in this league, and it's not like the guys surrounding him are non-threats. Jaylen Brown, Jeff Teague, who I thought was a pretty good pickup for them. Even a guy like Tristan Thompson hanging around the basket is a good finisher. This team will be fine offensively as the season goes on.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm selling that they're going to be bad, as bad in the regular season as they were in the preseason for all the reasons you guys outlined. And Brad Stevens is a really good offensive coach, right? Like, there's that part of the equation,
no way,
too. So, all right, that's the closing bell. We'll hold all here, future trading, until the regular season resumes and see how the market plays out. Coming up next, we're going into a deep dive on the 76ers. They have a new coach, new president, and new supporting cast. But the key question is, do you believe in the Simmons-Embiid duo? We'll answer that next. We're just one day away from the start of the 2021 NBA season, as we just mentioned, and you know what that means. The Jump's Previously On segments are back. This is like when your favorite TV show returns from hiatus and, you know, they catch you up on everything that happened the last time you saw them. So now it's time for Previously On, the Philadelphia 76ers.
This Sixers starting five, folks, might be one of the most talented starting fives in the entire NBA.
Philadelphia is clicking on all cylinders.
The window is now. Our opportunity is now.
And with Philadelphia, the other story going on right now is, will they get home court in the playoffs, and what will their seeding be? This is one of the best teams in the NBA at home. It is one of the worst teams of any playoff team on the road.
Worst among all teams.
Listen, a lot of people was on the Sixers bandwagon at the start of the season. Guess who wasn't? I wasn't. And where they playing at, Rachel? At a neutral site.
The Boston Celtics move on by defeating the 76ers 4-0.
You didn't arrive at this place this season. I'm looking at everything if I'm the Sixers.
What do you think the issue is with this team?
Yeah, that was a stupid question. There's no issue. There was a lot of stuff going on and just, you know, leave and learn.
Sixers have fired head coach Brett Brown.
I want to switch gears, though, because Doc Rivers, not on the open market for long, guys. He has reached a 5-year deal to be the head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers.
5 years?
If we're going to win, just can't keep doing what you've always done and think you're going to get different results.
Yeah, expectations are high. Everybody's coming with a good energy and a positive mindset.
Yeah! Yeah!
I'm going to still try to do my best to bring the championship back to Philly.
All right, the cliffhanger for the 76ers, a long-running trope for this particular team. The Simmons and Embiid duo. Amin, do you still believe this duo can win at the highest level?
I believe in still giving it a chance, yes. I think these two guys are very, very elite talents at different positions. Has it always clicked together? No, but I think there's definitely things that can be done before we give up on this experiment.
Yeah, I wouldn't give up on it. I think what they did by moving Al Horford, and now they're going to play all spacing to highlight their two best players, is going to change things for them. Nothing makes your best player look better than shooting. When you got a lot of shooters around, I know when we had LeBron and D-Wade, we packed that team with different guys that could shoot the ball, and that just made them look that much better. And so the Sixers have done that with their roster. I think they got a coach who has a chip on his shoulder right now who wants to really prove himself again, reprove after already winning a title. But he's obviously gotten a lot of criticism from media and even players on his old team about how they used him. And I just think Doc is going to come in with a serious chip, and he's going to get these guys to play together and connect. And think about it. They're so bad on the road. What is the road about? The road is about team connection, because it's just you out there. And they didn't have that last year for whatever reasons. And hopefully Doc can mend that.
Yeah, and I think that is certainly something that they have to address. There's no question. Now, look, I picked the Sixers to come out of the East last year in the preseason during on ESPN.com. I don't know if I'm going down that path just yet. But I do believe in this duo. If you look at their surrounding cast, as you pointed out, Fizz, a couple of years ago, they had J.J. Redick, Ersan Ilyasova, Marco Bellinelli on that team. Simmons and Embiid that year, their net rating was like plus 18 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Then the next year, it was just J.J., right? They brought in Jimmy. They brought in less shooting, though, Now, I think that got cut in half. It was like plus 9, basically. Last year, it was like 1.6, plus 1.6 or something like that. They need the spacing. I think that is the biggest key for them. It allows them to roam and play their game. All right, next. The plot twist over the offseason was the hiring of Doc Rivers. Fizz, what changes most with Doc at the helm?
I think his edge. I just think Doc is at a place where after how it went down with the Clippers, I think he's coming in there with a serious edge, and he's going to make sure that they have it. I think Brett Brown last year was put in a tough position. It all kind of came tumbling down on him. But, you know, that had festered over time, and I know he did a lot of work to try to fix it. But they moved to Doc, and I think Doc coming in with that championship or bust attitude, and Embiid coming in the best shape of his life will put them in a place where that they're going to be a dangerous team.
Yeah, and Coach, you know, there's sometimes all it needs is a fresh voice, a fresh set of eyes to look at things. You know, Brett, as you said, have been there for so long. It's hard to make drastic changes when you've been there for so long and everyone's kind of gotten used to one way. Mm-hmm. With Doc coming in, he can suggest some radical things, and everyone's going to say, well, that's what the new coach wants. The other thing is, you look at Embiid, you look at all the bigs that have played under Doc Rivers, whether it was DeAndre Jordan, Kendrick Perkins, going all the way back to Ben Wallace in Orlando. Doc has a way of unlocking bigs and getting them their full potential. Mm-hmm. And Embiid is clearly more talented than any of those names that I just named. I'm excited to see what Doc could do there. And also, in terms of the play calling, you know, one of the things that I love that they used to do with the Clippers was Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, what they called a snug pick and roll. It was so low, it was almost down on the baseline. You can't go under, you can't do anything. They're so close to the basket, it's very hard to defend. I want to see Simmons and Embiid do something like that. That way, taking Simmons' lack of shooting out of the equation. I think Doc is going to be great for this team.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. You guys nailed it. All right, here are the games 76ers fans will need to binge watch. In the first half of the season, they've got five huge matchups on ESPN, coincidentally, all at home. That's a good news or a good thing for Philly, obviously, because they were 31-4 at home, as we mentioned, but only 12-26 on the road last season. So, Amin, do you think they will be any better on the road this year?
Well, it's hard to be worse, George, right? They were going to hit rock bottom. At one point, they had a better road record than only the Atlanta Hawks and the New York Knicks in the entire league. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that's not a good standard to hold. So part of me wants to say that it was just an anomaly, that there's no way that they're that bad on the road, particularly, again, with two elite talents like that. But the other part of it is also, I think that's going to be a point of emphasis coming in, knowing we were embarrassing away from Philadelphia. How do we correct whatever the issues were, whether it was travel, whether it was maybe having a night out on the town, whatever it is, we can take a look at what we did last year and say we're not going to do that again this year.
Yeah, and this team, just think about where they were. They're a Kawhi Leonard fadeaway, hang on the rim shot away from really getting to a huge step in their progression, right? In the process, like they called it. So that team isn't far away. And adding a guy like Doc Rivers, who's going to make them understand winning road games is going to get us those games at home. And Doc is going to really emphasize the defensive end and understanding how to make each other better and share the ball. And I think that's where that team is going to come together. And I got them being the number two team in the East right now.
Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah, I put it out there. Yeah, what?
I think that you could take those first five or six teams.
Superstars. They got two stars.
No doubt. Okay, let's move on. Let's move on. Let's get the spoiler alert because we could talk about it. The spoiler alert now. Caesars William Hill gives the Sixers tied for the fifth best chance of winning the East. So, Fizz, your bold prediction is second for Philly. Now, I look at those teams, Bucks, Nets, Celtics, Heat, Sixers, Raptors. Man, you could throw them all in a bowl, pick out, you know, names, and that could be the order because they're all that close, I think, in regards to their style of play, their rosters, etc.
Yeah, and I just think at the end of the day, you got two monsters on the same team, and they are a matchup problem for most teams that they're going to face. And let's be honest, they've underachieved to this point.
Sure.
No way that Miami should be going past them right now. Toronto shouldn't be blowing past them right now. And the Celtics and them should be at, you know, fighting it out. Now Brooklyn's in the mix. I'm giving Philly the nod to number
two. Okay. I mean?
Look, Coach,
what you
I'm
going to
tell you something. Brooklyn got two monsters. Okay. Boston's got a couple of monsters. Milwaukee got the monster of all monsters there with the $229 million monster. And Miami, while they may not be fully fledged monsters, they are deep. They got a lot of monsters over there, and they run together. And I think the continuity of Boston, Milwaukee, and Miami, that's what I'm putting them ahead in terms of the equation. And then Brooklyn, I just have a lot more faith in Kyrie and Kevin Durant to get on the same page quicker than what the Sixers are going through. It's a transformation, and I think the Sixers will be good, but I'm going chalk here, George. I'm going fifth in the East.
Ooh.
Yeah. I honestly, I'm with Amin, Coach. Like, I think
that's
tough. 4 or 5 in that range. Like, I look at Brooklyn, Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee will win the regular season again. I think Brooklyn will come out of the East. I had them, spoiler alert, it's probably going to come out on ESPN.com. I have them in Miami in the conference finals. But I just see Philly's in that kind of 4-5 range. Boston's going to be in there. I'm curious to see what Kemba looks like with the injury situation. But I think they're in that 4-5 fighting for home court advantage.
Is Boston better than they were last year? We don't know.
I don't know.
Gordon Hayward is a big, big piece.
Sure.
Right? And Toronto lost Ibaka.
Right.
Gasol.
Yeah.
I mean, the East have shifted. And I'm talking about a Philly team that's connected.
Right.
And a Philly team that has an Embiid that's in shape with a championship coach and Doc Rivers and more spacing.
Yeah.
Seth, Danny Green, a bunch of other guys. They're only going to play space fours. Watch out.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's crazy to think that they could be two. Again, you could put all those names in a bowl, pick them out, and I think the order could be random every which time, and I'd agree with it.
No doubt.
All right. Up next, we discuss the biggest challenges facing new coaches, like Doc Rivers, who we just discussed, but we'll talk about Steve Nash, Stan Van Gundy, Tibbs, and many more. Welcome back to The Jump. We're almost out of time here today, but before we go, I want to catch up with some of the new head coaches around the league here. There were 9 coaching changes since the end of last season. There's a list of them there. So, Coach Fizz,
yeah.
What's the biggest obstacle, as we tackle a few of these, facing Steve Nash in his first season with the Nets?
Well, I think first off is really making him understand championship expectations. Luckily, he's got a couple of champions there that can help him manage that. But I also think managing the egos, keeping everybody's ego in check is going to be a huge deal. And I think ultimately, at the end of the day, can he keep these guys playing at a high level, even though he's got some guys coming back off of injury, and still putting them in position to have home court advantage?
I mean?
Yeah, I think the big thing is, how do you balance two guys who like to play a certain way with a different style that'll help everybody else on the team? And being able to manage that, as Coach said, manage those egos. You let them do what they do, but also get them to buy in to something that's bigger than themselves. And I think the reason why Steve got this job over several other deserving candidates was because he's got a different personality, and he can connect with those guys on a level that not many people in the world can. He is a former 2-time MVP, and they would respect his opinions. So part and parcel of that is selling them on things that maybe they wouldn't have bought from someone else. And I think that's the biggest obstacle that Steve's got to face in his first season.
I just think that dealing with the rotation, I think, will be a thing, right? Like, and just kind of managing that aspect and those expectations. But to your point, Amin and Fizz, he's a guy that was so well respected during his time and certainly after his time that I think that will be an adjustment, because it'll just be part of the regular everyday stuff that he's got to do.
Right.
But I think he'll be able to handle it pretty well. All right, next up, Amin, what's the biggest obstacle facing Stan Van Gundy with the Pelicans?
Well, I think we talked about a little bit earlier with Zion is managing his health and his weight and his conditioning. And these are questions that we are going to ask repeatedly throughout the first few years of this guy's career. Look, when he was healthy and he was playing last year, Alvin Gentry looked like a pretty good coach too. And so, it's hard to win games when your best talent is not available. And Zion played, as I said, barely 20 games last year. Stan's got to find a way to keep him motivated, keep him in good condition, and also not burning him out.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I do think that Stan has a system and a formula for doing that. I mean, he comes from the Heat culture where they thrive on getting guys in great condition. And so I think Zion will buy into that, because Stan is going to explain it to him in a way that really makes him understand the why. and how this really is going to help him long term over the course of his career. But the other thing I think the really big challenge is getting these young guys to play elite level defense and really be committed and tied together and playing at a level that will get them in the playoffs and get them over the hump every single night. We'll see if they can do that. Stan's a defensive coach. We know that he can bring that out of guys.
Yeah, look, I think that defense is certainly something that he'll have to keep an eye on. I think that they, at times, miss the requisite amount of shooting. I mean, I know JJ's on that roster, but
that's enough.
But beyond that, I think that there's some questions there potentially as far as their shooting and how Stan try to kind of manages that aspect of it as far as making sure the spacing is right.
I think that'll be on his plate.
Finally, Coach Fizz, what's the biggest obstacle facing Tom Thibodeau in his first season with the Knicks?
You know what, I think at the end of the day, it's just going to be a process. You know, as Tibbs institutes a top-notch defense and starts to build those great defensive habits, I think it's going to be the Knicks putting the right pieces around Tibbs that he can coach and push to that level that'll get the Knicks over the hump. But I think ultimately, Tibbs has got to hammer home what means the most to him, which I know him. He is a defensive-minded guy. He's going to try to get the habits and get that team playing at a consistent level defensively, understanding how important that is to them becoming a better basketball team.
You know, George, Ian O'Connor wrote an excellent piece for ESPN.com that came out today where he talks about Parcells and Tom Coughlin and Joe Girardi, other New York coaches who had to learn, I'm not going to compromise who I am in terms of being demanding and demanding excellence, but I have to be able to connect with these guys on a human level. And I think that's Tibbs' big, I think his big obstacle is Tibbs away from the game is a lovely person. We've worked with him at Jump. He's an awesome guy. How do we bring awesome Tibbs to work, though? That's his struggle. He's got to figure out to bring the focus and also the personality there.
But I also think that's why you hire Mark Woodson. That's why you hire Kenny Payne. That's why you put together a staff with Johnny Bryant and guys like that so that you have, for anything that may be miscommunicated or not understood from the coach to the player, you got great people there that can communicate what was meant, and that way guys can keep moving forward and getting better.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, teach those young guys to be pros, right? Like,
absolutely.
I think that's the biggest obstacle he has. Real quick on Billy Dee in Chicago, you got anything on them?
I think they're young. He's going to get them playing his style of game, and he's going to make all those young kids better basketball players.
Yeah, for sure. All right, thanks to Coach Fizz. Thanks to Amin.
Feelings hurt today.
Jump returns tomorrow on ESPN. Rachel will be back. Make sure you tune in.